I know I'm sure that we're all pretty proficient at working from home and conference calls and Zoom, et cetera. So I guess I would just ask that if you're not speaking, please remain thoughtful of background noise. And if needed, go ahead and mute your mic if you're not participating in the conversation. And so with that, we will go ahead and conduct a roll call of participants in the meeting. It's really important we get everyone's names really clearly for our minutes taker at the board staff. And I'm going to go ahead and start with QC members just to ensure that we have a quorum. And then we'll move on to board staff and then applicants and supervisor licensees. So let's go ahead and identify ourselves. Megan Kurz, I'm here this morning. And then I'll go around the room and ask just the other board staff to please, or excuse me, other QC members to please identify themselves.
My login had some problems, so I'm really Stacy. There we go. My login had some problems this morning, so I'm really Stacy, but it says I'm Ashley, board staff.
Noted. Thank you. Well, good morning, Stacy.
Good morning.
It's nice to see your face this morning, and yes, par for the course with these Zoom calls and all of the tech that we're now getting. We're really adaptable, so this is good. Okay, so now we'll move on to applicants that are on the line. Could you please identify yourselves, unmute your mics, and please state your name for the roll call. Jennifer Joyner. Good morning, Jennifer.
Marley Gutches.
Good morning, Marley.
Sigil Phillip.
Good morning, Sigil. Welcome.
Thank you. Good morning.
Hi, this is Priyanka Raghuwansi.
Good morning, Priyanka. Thank you.
Jeremy Anderson.
Good morning, Jeremy. Okay, so that looks like the majority of our applicants are on the line with us this morning. And then supervisor licensees, if you could please identify yourselves and then also just know which applicant you are here supporting today, that would be really helpful.
Rachel Bosworth, CPA supervisor, supporting Marley Gutches.
Good morning, Rachel.
Good morning.
Okay. Is there anyone else on the call that has not identified themselves yet this morning?
Jason Robinson. Good morning.
Good morning, Jason. Thank you. Okay. All right, well, I think we have a good roll. So our next item of business is under item 2 in the agenda. Does everyone have a copy of the agenda to follow along? Sure. We should. Stacy sent it out yesterday, so we should all be on the same page. But item number 2 includes a review and approval of the agenda for today's meeting. And so that item, I believe, is titled Revised Agenda. And so I would open up to the committee any commentary, any discussion over the agenda, any questions, concerns, etc. And then if there are none, I would entertain a motion to approve.
I'll make a motion to approve the agenda.
Thank you, Michael. Is there a second? Thanks, Brian. All those in favor of approving the agenda for this morning's meeting?
Aye.
Any opposed or abstentions? Okay, the motion passes. Thank you.
So can you hear me?
Oh. Yes, we can hear you.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning, sir.
Let's continue.
Okay, so we will now move to item 3, the report of board action. So we've got our new liaison, Jason Robinson, is with us on the line this morning, and we're thrilled to meet you. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
From the board, and just kind of an update on how the applications that went through from the last round, I guess the August 12th meeting, have we been feedback, and the meetings we've completed, incorporate into our review, et cetera.
All the applicants that were put forward by the committee were approved, so I don't think there was any questions or any discussion about any of your judgment calls on those. So I don't think there was any rules or regulations that came across that would affect the committee itself. Other than that, I don't really have anything else to report.
Well, excellent. All right. Well, thank you for that. It's nice to have you here, and thank you very much for that update.
I think Julie's raising her hand.
Yeah, okay, and I think we have a couple of new people jumped on, too.
Oh, thank you for noticing that. Good morning, everyone. You've joined the Board of Accountancy, the Oregon Board of Accountancy Qualifications Committee. Would you be able to please indicate your name and your purpose for joining the call?
Yes, can you hear me? My name is Hugh Cow. I also go by Henry as well.
Good morning, Hugh. Thank you. It looks like you are a current applicant.
Yes, that's correct.
Great, thank you. Has anyone else joined the call that's not identified? Okay, great. Okay. So moving to our next agenda item, we are ready to move into new applications or pending applications for today. So on the docket, we have 5 current applications. All of those candidates are on the line, and then we have 1 deferred application, and a candidate is also on the line. And so, switch the order up a little bit in the presentation this morning. I know Ms. Joyner is on the call, but Aaron Piazza is not here this morning, and we have a video of Aaron presenting the application. We're working on some kind of technical aspects of how to get that up and running. So I think we'll start with current application number 2, Jeremy Anderson. And Michael, I believe you were the reviewer on that application. I'll turn the call over to you.
Perfect. Thank you. So as you said, I reviewed Jeremy Anderson's application. He's employed at the Oregon Industry Network as the finance director. He's been in that position since February of 2015, where he obtained all the experience that he had documented in his narrative. Initially, the company did not have a licensed CPA, so they actually went out and hired a licensed CPA, Kevin Gregg, to oversee Jeremy's work experience for a period of over a year. that was an item that actually went forward to the board in 2017 to weigh in on it, if that would be acceptable, in which they didn't have any objection to that arrangement. Jeremy and I went back and forth with a couple edits. You know, I appreciated his first draft was pretty thorough, a lot of good examples. There were a couple areas where, you know, I thought he could provide some additional examples to help strengthen the narrative and also kind of close the loop on certain aspects of the competencies. You know, most of those edits were in B and D, also had some other clarifying items in other competencies, but overall, you know, I really appreciate Jeremy's attitude and willingness to really jump on and take all the recommendations that I made seriously, and, you know, a lot of thought and effort went into making those edits, so I appreciate that, Jeremy. And I guess at this time I can open it up to the rest of the committee if you had any questions, comments, concerns that you'd like to discuss.
Questions related to the employment track and generally on the supervision. So on the application, it appears that during the time of qualified supervision, the candidate held two concurrent positions, one at the Oregon Ministry Network, and then one as a self-employed individual. So I'm trying to get a sense for whether the, I say it was 15 months of qualified supervision that was stated in the application. By Mr. Zickrig. Was that full-time supervision, or was that part-time, or how did those two roles interact on a concurrent basis? And that question may be for Jeremy as well.
Yeah, I was going to say, Jeremy, if I know you're on the line, if you want to address that.
Yeah, my role as self-employed was outside of the work with Kevin Greig. Kevin Greig was a part-time employee hired on by the Oregon Ministry Network to supervise my work as Director of Finance.
Okay, so that position at the Oregon Ministry Network for those 15 months was, for all intents and purposes, at least 12 months of full-time supervision. Is that what I'm to understand?
Yeah.
Other commentary or discussion on the application? Also, just kind of a sidebar here. Thank you, Michael, for opening the application up for discussion. It is much easier to have that opportunity to discuss as a group ahead of presenting a motion. So that's kind of why we're taking this opportunity to see if anyone has questions or comments on the application at this time. Just a couple of questions on competency B that I was hoping to run by the group and get feedback on and or, you know, confer with the candidate if needed. So kind of some questions just related to the overall KPIs and really being able to kind of articulate what the benchmark is related to the specific KPIs, what's considered good, what's considered an opportunity for improvement, and what actions will really be taken to kind of move the needle on that benchmark, as well as how some KPIs may interact with others. And I think I was just having a little bit of trouble kind of following some of the documentation. And maybe that was just me. Maybe it was late. So, questions, I guess I would pose to the rest of the committee. Anyone else have questions related to competency B? Let's see, or E?
I'm hearing you something.
Oh, sorry, I was opening it up to my colleagues on the qualifications committee.
Steve is on the qualifications committee now, and I think that was Steve trying to talk in.
I'm so sorry.
No, it's okay. I'm putting it all together.
Great. Okay, so it sounds like none from the committee. So Jeremy, would you be able to kind of help me understand, maybe pick one of the KPIs that you've selected and kind of talk us through what's the benchmark, what would be considered good performance, what would be considered maybe suboptimal performance, and what are some actions that your organization would take that would help implement within the organization to move the needle? In particular, there was a discussion regarding, a SWOT analysis related to the network and some initial measures and factors that could be analyzed for future understanding of successfulness. And then what I really wanted to really close the knot on this was some quantitative discussion about the average minister tithe to total ministers and then minister age to years of service, level of credentials to the age, et cetera, and what's considered a positive indicator on those KPIs or benchmarks, and then what is something that's an opportunity for improvement, and then how as an organization would you be able to kind of move the needle on those areas?
Yeah, so this is, I had a mini graph that they left out sold that could not be in this paper, so that was some of that quantitative analysis that was in part of this. Overall, the KPIs, we, as kind of program outcomes of our benchmarks, trying to quantify the good that a nonprofit does and what we were trying to obtain by putting quantifiable measures into some of these KPIs and identifying the ongoing trends of tenure trends over ministers versus their giving record based on the health of our organization as far as our training and equipping of our 600 plus ministers throughout the state and the churches that equip them and hire them, and trying to put a quantifiable measure on the organizational health of each and every one of our churches that are employing our ministers, and the and being able to quantify, we put that into charts for our board of presbyteries to review and make further analysis on if our training measures are working, if our program outreaches are working, and items like that.
I guess I'm still having a little trouble with that, because that sounds to me like it's very general of what your objectives are, but I'm not seeing. I don't see what you are actually measuring. It's like, yes, it's just a very general answer. Like, how do you actually quantify data like that? I don't know how to ask.
Jeremy, did you happen to catch the question raised by the committee member regarding the quantification of that data and kind of really some kind of very specific measurements and tools utilized for those measurements?
Yeah. The data that we would look into would be some of the measures are our total ministers over average giving, our salary adjustments or our salary analysis of each and every minister, and just being able to put into the ratio that we have metrics that identify a certain level of retirees, how many retirees there are versus active ministers, lead pastors, and the tithes that they are giving. And just trying to, because it's, when you have 600 ministers, you're trying to analyze how the health of those overall ministers throughout the state, and trying to take that into account with their tithes as a quantifiable metric.
Okay, so it looks like that is one of the primary ones, that is the tithing for the church as a whole. It gets attributed to the minister, and then the minister's effectiveness is determined by that, and then your organization's effectiveness is determined and rated by that.
Yeah, because it's our way of measuring if we have pastors out there that aren't making a lot of money, then it can directly resemble the health of the church, the health of the board that promoting the salary of that pastor. So that is one way we can quantify and group into different regions or different sections our churches and the health of our lower income churches or the churches that might be towards the end of their business cycle, so that we can then either develop business strategies with them to either realign, pivot, and meet their market of their community, or if we need to close a business or replace a new pastor in there. So those are some of the metrics we use. The tithes is probably the biggest one, are to be able to quantify the health of the minister, which it can directly relate to the health of the church as well.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Jeremy. One more question on competency E. Looks like the competency is predominantly focused on two areas. One, accounts payable, and then the next one is revenue, which I thought was pretty good. But it was kind of just generally confirming revenue as part of an audit procedure. So the read that I got from the competency, and I just love your input on this, was more of references back to what your external audit firm with the network's external audit firm perceived as risk. So would you help us be able to understand as a committee how you objectively review the financial statements of the institution that you are working with and what you perceive to be at risk and what your kind of thought process is as you go through that assessment?
Yeah, can I get a repeat on that question?
Absolutely. So my read of competency E, I noticed a lot of references back to what the Ministry Network's external audit firm perceived as financial statement risk for your organization. And I'm curious how you personally approach that risk assessment and what you perceive to be as the most significant risks for the organization, rather than a reference to maybe what the auditors told you the risk was.
All right, thank you. Financial statement risk, some of the ways I would identify it outside of what the auditors might identify. It kind of correlates the same with what they're looking for, but I would be looking at our risk of internal control errors, and the risk that we are presenting accurate and timely financials each month to our board of presbyters, making sure that the the data that's being collected by our accounting staff is accurate each month, making sure internal controls are in place that keep consistent data being collected and placed in the appropriate transaction cycles, and be able to assess what the risk of inappropriate, or not inappropriate, but misappropriated financial data, and making sure that errors are accounted for on time and items like that.
Ellen Wong, I did have one comment. It's not in my notes, so forgive me if I take good notes while reviewing your application. In Company CF, I thought you did a really nice job walking through an example where you identified data trends. The part that isn't jumping out at me was the example where you did either research or interpreted a technical accounting issue. Did I miss that, or could you be able to expand on that example?
I'm trying to look through the paper quick. I know one technical accounting issue did an extensive amount of research on was FASB 2016-14 when that came out and implementing for our financial audit back in 2017. And there was a lot of technical research, webinars, bulletins, all that kind of stuff that was reviewed, making sure the standards were applied to our specific situation.
Since that point, have you had an opportunity to do any other research that's been needed in your line of work, or what you've seen come across from that?
Yeah, with being in a nonprofit religious sector, there's annual analysis of any Supreme Court cases that come through and how that would affect a church, both on a legal standpoint and a business practice. There's and then there's any other I can't think of a specific FASB that would have come up that would affect our company specifically, but yeah, I keep a ongoing research on any and all upcoming items that would affect a non-religious nonprofit.
Just to dig into that question a little bit more, how are you staying current on trends or things that could potentially impact your nonprofit space?
For instance, just this last 2 weeks, I was part of the BMWO, which is the leading nonprofit CPA firm in the U.S. that had a one-day conference, virtual this year, of course, but that was an overview of any legal, payroll, finance, Supreme Court, anything that, any and all, FASB, GAAP, anything that affects a nonprofit. And that's just one specific example. I'm subscribed to many different email articles that come through, keeping current on that kind of item for anything that would affect our nonprofit, evaluated the validity, if it's anything that we can take action on right away and implement, make sure that we're current with those changes.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Jeremy or for Michael on the application? Okay. Hearing none, Michael, I'll go back to you for a motion.
Yeah, I guess before I do that, do the individuals that ask questions feel like the discussion was sufficient to satisfy any concerns. It sounded like it, but I don't want to put words in people's mouths, so.
This is Ellen Wong. I thought he answered my question well. Part of my concern was just within the documentation, everything was the one example, but with legal and ongoing changes in our current environment, I know how difficult it is to stay current and stay on top of that. And because it didn't sound like there was any peers in his network, we could also lean on our leverage, just making sure that he had built that network outside of the association to stay current on some of his ever changing legislation.
Ellen, if I may also add, I am also in constant contact with many other CPAs that are in some of our larger churches as well, and so we kind of create a peer network as well to bounce ideas around and make sure that we're all staying current as well together.
Thank you. That's good context.
I also felt that he answered my question.
Sufficient evidence that Jeremy Anderson has demonstrated the competencies necessary for initial licensing per OAR 801-010-0065.
Thank you. Do we have a second? This is Ellen Wong, I second.
All those in favor of approving the application of Jeremy Anderson?
Aye.
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 Any committee members opposed to the motion? Okay, any abstentions? Okay, the motion passes. Thank you. All right, so the next applicant on our list is C.J. Phillip, which Norm Rush, I believe, is your application, Mr. Johnson.
Yeah, thank you, Megan. Good morning, everybody. Can everybody hear me okay? Yeah, excellent. Okay. Well, good. I did review the application for C. Joe Phillip, and C. Joe is on Zoom with us this morning. After my initial review of C. Joe's application, I didn't have any recommendations for him for any potential audits. I felt like his application was extremely strong, and he gives examples. Hopefully you'll concur with me. The applicant, C. Joe, and I corresponded regarding this, and he concurred that he agreed he didn't have any updates to submit. So the application you're reading is as originally submitted by C. Joe. C. Joe is employed with his company as the senior manager of internal audit, and he has also held the position of chief accountant. I think he's been with his company since 2013, and his period of direct supervision was from, if I have my dates correct, without looking, December of 2017 through May of 2019.
That's correct.
So if you'll allow me, I'd like to briefly discuss C. Joe's narrative and examples for each of the competencies, and then perhaps I can open it to questions to the group. So for competency A, the applicant does a good job of providing examples of how he has exercised integrity, objectivity, independence, professional judgment, due care, and skepticism. He includes maintaining confidential market information that he becomes aware of in the performance of his audits, notifying his manager of any conflicts of interest that he has, if he has, because he's held different positions in his company, and independently assessing whether management has complied with company policies with respect to expansion activities. For competency B, the applicant provides detailed narrative of his understanding of the internal and external environment of his company, his company's objectives, company KPIs, and why they are important to his company, and the regulatory issues in the 15 different countries that his company operates in. For competency C, the applicant broke down his examples of preparing working papers and sufficient relevant data into three categories. And let me, turn to that. The three subcategories he breaks his experience down into for competency C are analysis and working papers supporting inventory valuation, analysis and working papers supporting tax liability and or tax asset, analysis and working papers supporting cash and bank overdrafts. He provides specific examples of how he has documented his work in these areas and how it was used effectively by the reviewer of his work to reach the same conclusions. Competency D, the applicant again broke down his narrative and examples into three main categories, which are understanding and evaluation of transaction streams and information systems related to rebates and supplier fees, understanding and evaluation of transaction streams and information systems related to purchase transactions, and understanding and evaluation of transaction streams and information systems related to sale transactions. For each category, he provided specific descriptions of the work he has performed, primarily in the course of internal audit engagements, to understand, perform tests of controls and substantive work on, and document the transaction flow and information system streams related to them. He has also performed analysis to determine the completeness and accuracy of data from source point to the GM. For competency E, for this competency, the applicant has also provided evidence of meeting the competency by grouping his experience into three categories, which are assessment of risk of misstatement and performance of procedures, and tests related to assertions on property, plant, and equipment, assessment of risk and misstatement and performance of procedures and tests related to assertions on accounts payable, and assessment of risk of misstatement and performance of procedures and tests related to assertions on revenue. Due to his work in the audit function for his company, the applicant was able to provide excellent examples of how he has evaluated the systems of internal control, assessed the risk of material misstatement, performed substantive and analytical review work, and report on his findings. For competency F, the applicant described his competencies related to critical thinking, problem solving, and decision in the areas of audit planning, audit execution, and audit reporting. One very good example the applicant provided here was a description of the work he performed on the company's procurement to payment cycle. He discovered overpayments being made to vendors based on analysis of purchase order data, vendor master data, and invoice data. He was able to recommend enhancement of controls and recovery of overpayments to his company. And then lastly, for competency T, since the applicant is engaged in the internal audit function, he described very effectively his work in documenting and communicating his audit plans, audit progress reports, and audit findings. I'll open it to any questions from the other committee members.
Thank you, Norm. That was a really thorough and very nice overview. I appreciate it. I also, I really liked this application. I thought it was very well organized. I thought the examples were strong. With that, any other comments or questions for the applicant on the narrative?
I really appreciated the way that it was laid out. Sometimes it's really hard to find all the subcomponents of a competency, and this made it really easy to identify, which example was related to which part of the competency. So, thank you for that.
No, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, I have a question. this document has to be notarized? All of them are notarized, or is that optional?
I can speak to that, actually. So in lieu or in light of COVID situation going right now in the country, the board has waived the notary requirement beginning in March and extended at least through the end of the year.
Oh, I see. Because this notary is not a U.S. person. So if that's required, you know, the laws of the notary public is very different. Each country has a different definition of notary public.
We do allow notary outside of the United States, and we do allow them to prepare it as they do in their country within their rules, but it is not required at this time. So if it is blank, that is okay, and the board has waived that requirement.
I see. Okay. Thank you.
Yes. I think in this case the silence is very reflective of what a strong applicant it was.
Would you like me to propose a motion, Megan?
That would be great. I guess, Nora, before you do that, would you be able to kind of talk us through the supervision aspect of the application and how that process went, if you were able to connect with the supervisor, and then anything else there? It would be helpful.
I did not contact the supervisor, Megan. I only corresponded with C.
Cena, would you be able to please describe for us the kind of nature of the interactions between you and the signing supervisor licensee, including frequency of interactions? It looks like potentially you're in two different geographic locations. Maybe just kind of talk us through how that process worked for you during this period of qualified supervision, please.
Thank you very much for this opportunity, and I'm very happy to share my experience with my supervisor. And he was actually a true mentor for me, who was able to identify the potentials in me and nature it and transform me in my career. And it started in December 2017 when he was appointed as the Senior Vice President of our Internal Audit Function. And from that day, I was closely associated with him in terms of annual internal audit plans. And subsequently, I have been engaged with him in every phases of the internal audits. In our organization, the internal audit activity is divided into three stages. So one is planning stage, where we analyze the critical information and decide what is the scope of the audit. And then we are engaged in the field work. After that, we prepare and communicate with our audit reports. And each of these phases, I have close connection with my senior vice president of internal audit function, where I share my thought process and he gives me the feedback in terms of initial stages in the thought process he was guiding me. And this is a kind of ongoing basis. And even though I was auditing different countries, I was stationed in corporate head office in Dubai, United Arab Emirates. And my supervisor was also stationed in the same office. So we had opportunity to meet him on a frequent basis, probably at least twice a week we meet in terms of completion of the project or evaluation of my work. And also when it comes to my administrative and functional reporting, he was in charge of that. And in our organization, this performance evaluation, etc., are very important when it comes to our performance and career growth within the organization.
Thank you, Sijo. I appreciate that. Okay. Norm, it sounds like I'll turn it back to you.
Okay, thank you, Megan. I move to find that there is sufficient evidence to make a preliminary finding that Sijo Philip has demonstrated the competencies necessary for initial licensing for OAR 801-010-0065.
Thank you. Second. Thanks, Michael. All right, all those in favor of the motion on the floor?
Aye.
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 Thank you. Any opposed? Any abstentions? Okay, hearing none, the motion passes. Thank you.
If you may allow me, I would like to thank NOAA and the entire qualification committee team members for the feedback and the support.
Thank you, CJ. Okay, moving on to our third current application. This application is for Marley Gutches, and Mary, I believe you're the reviewer on Marley's application.
Marley works for, she's applying coming from Lithium Motors. We've had several people in the last couple of years that have applied through Lithium Motors. They have a program there, where they have an MOU with us, with the, I guess it's with the Board of Accounts, to supervise employees' work, and they have CPAs that oversee this. And so we had somebody who applied about a year ago who had the same supervisors that Marley has had and done some of the same work that Marley is now doing. So it looks like there's a transition that goes through the company. It's a very well-organized company, and I think there's a lot of oversight. When you talk about the relationship that she has with her supervisors, she describes it as being a very close relationship with a lot of discussion and back and forth, which is what other candidates have also indicated. And so it looks like the atmosphere or the culture of the company is conducive to the supervisory information that we like to see. She has demonstrated her work in the tax area. She's mentioned several projects that she's been part of that have given her a breadth of experience. Given COVID's impact on the retail industry and Lithia, of course, which was automobiles and sales, they've been hard hit by COVID, and so she's had to do a lot of projections and tracking of information and communicating of information to help the company guide its way through this new environment with COVID. She does projections with quarterlies. She does quarterly estimates and keeps abreast of those for not just income tax, but sales tax. She works with the measurements of net income, earnings per share, to help the company maximize their goals in these areas. She tries to do depreciation. She's done a lot of work with depreciation and fixed assets. There's been new legislation that has allowed them to use more bonus depreciation than they had in the past, and so it's a lot of assets and a lot of movement in what they can depreciate, and that, of course, adds to cash flow if you can speed that up. So she's been very strong in that area. They have an outside consultant that does quite a bit of the work in doing estimates, and she worked closely with those CPAs to do that, to give them the information they need, to answer their questions when they have questions. And there, she has a lot of different sales organizations. There's, I don't remember how many, but multiple states, multiple agencies. And part of her work has been to try to consolidate information and look for potential errors in the data entry where at a local level something might get misclassified and an item might be misclassified, needs to be reclassified and brought up into the financial statement to be able to the other agencies. I hope that shows it. And the only thing I would say on it, there's an awful lot, but this has been true of the other applicants from Lithia. There's a lot of promoting of Lithia. Lithia is a strong company, and there is a lot of information that is given about the company itself that shows that she knows her company, but sometimes it detracted from what she has done. But I do think that she has done different different activities that would be requisite for a new CPA. But I'd like to hear what anybody else has to say.
Thank you, Mary. Questions or comments on Norma's application from the group?
Megan, this is Norm. I'll just say, I thought, again, this was an excellent application, and the examples were really good, and I really appreciate the use of very specific data, the insertion of tables into the narrative. It's just very well done. I really appreciated it.
I agree that I really liked how the examples showed the understanding of the impact as on the company as a whole. I thought that was really, really nice in the application.
One item that I just wanted to call out, just because I did see in her history that she did used to work at Moss Adams, I just wanted to say that we never worked together. We were in different offices, so no issue with my ability to vote, you know, objectively.
I don't have the wording right in front of me. We had some trouble getting on, and so I couldn't print out everything I wanted to before the meeting. So if somebody else wouldn't mind making the motion when it becomes time to make the motion, because I don't have the exact wording. Is that okay?
Thanks, Mary. I'm sure someone would be willing to do that, absolutely. Any other questions or comments on Marley's application from the team? All right. Well, absent any further discussion, is there someone on the committee that would be able to bring forth a motion on the application?
Michael, would you mind reading it again? Because you have it right there.
Yeah, I actually just shot it in the chat feature.
Oh.
But I don't know if you have that up. Otherwise.
All right. Okay. I move to find that there is sufficient evidence that Marley Reeves has demonstrated the competencies necessary for initial licensing per OAR 801-010-0065. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you, Mary. Julie, any concerns with the maiden name versus the legal name?
Oh, that's right. I'm sorry. It's Marley Gooches. I'm sorry. Thank you. Marley Gooches has demonstrated the competency.
And it has not been seconded yet. So
prior name.
Okay. Did you see the look of fear on my face?
Sorry. Because I'm nervous.
I'll second it.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, Michael. All those in favor of approval of the application of Marley Gutches?
Aye.
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 Great. Any opposed? And then I will need to abstain. Marley and I had the pleasure of working together in a prior role, so I will abstain from this vote. But I would vote in favor if I could. So congratulations, Marley. Thanks for your time. Very
you.
Nice.
Thank you to the committee and Mary. I really appreciate it.
Okay, so moving on to the fourth application in the pipeline today, Henry Chow. Ellen, I believe you were the reviewer on this application.
Yes, I was. Thank you. And I'm so glad Henry was able to jump on. I was a little worried when Henry wasn't with us at the beginning, so I'm glad you could join. I'd like to introduce everyone to Henry Cow. The vast majority of his CPA readiness experience has been with Cambia Health. Health Solutions. This is where he's held several accounting positions and now is a senior accountant too. Henry reports up through, so sorry if I butcher his last name, Justin Stroh. He is a licensed CPA with the state of Washington, but he also worked closely with Megan Wilcox, the Assistant Director of Financial Accounting and Reporting. This is his CPA mentor, and they worked together closely as a part of Cambia's CPA program, similar to Lydia that we just discussed. So in reading his initial narrative, I believe that Henry has had robust experience within Cambia and within that CPA readiness program. The edits that were made to the initial narrative were really to expand on specifics of the projects that he's worked on and the areas that he's been involved in. And I thought he did a nice job of updating documentation and was very responsive and receptive to all the comments that we discussed. So I'll take the group through Henry's narrative. In competency A, I believe that Henry provided good examples where he demonstrated his understanding of the code of professional conduct through his roles at Cambia. He had clear examples where he used his professional skepticism and obtained support to corroborate balances for variances. In other examples, he illustrated due diligence and due professional care by developing an understanding of the business and the flows of transactions. He was even examining formulas to make sure that they were calculating variances as part of his peer reviews. I also thought he did a nice job articulating how he had internalized the annual trainings and the conflict of interest disclosures to really understand the importance of maintaining independence of both fact and appearance. In competency B, I appreciated how Henry was able to weave in his understanding of how performance measures and critical success factors at Cambia were influenced by both economic and regulatory trends. In competency C, I thought Henry had some strong examples of an instance where he was asked to analyze and document contractual arrangements for adjustments in fee schedule payouts. These were new to Cambia, and they required research to determine the proper accounting and presentation. This work was documented in workbooks that he was then able to share with other team members, and they were also able to use these workbooks to understand the accounting treatment and were able to come to the same conclusion on the classification of expenses. In competency D, as well as in other areas, Henry highlighted his involvement with new system implementations. This required a detailed understanding of the flow of transactions, both accounting and system-wise. He's needed to understand how the data was entered all the way through to how it flowed onto financial statements. He also had examples where he corroborated with other teams to implement additional controls that were relevant to revenue recognition, specifically in analyzing month-over-month earned premium and aged receivables. As part of competency E, Henry outlined where, based on his understanding of transactions, he was able to reduce the risk of material misstatement financials by redesigning portions of the closing procedure. This included incorporating Excel workbooks to combine check figures as well as adding additional detailed documentation. This improved the timeliness of detecting and correcting errors during the monthly close process, and this was demonstrated through a reduction in the number of adjusting entries that were needed after reconciliations. As a part of competency F, I thought Henry had a strong example where he reviewed technical accounting guidance surrounding admitted assets versus non-admitted assets and according with NAIC. Through his research, he was able to conclude that an investment asset previously not admitted could actually be treated as an admitted asset for a subsidiary, their Regents Blue Shields Group. I thought he did a nice job on documenting how that conclusion was impactful to both the financial statements as well as risk-based capital for their insurance industry. In competency G, Henry had several examples that illustrated how he was able to effectively communicate accounting matters and results to a wide audience, such as leadership meetings, operations, and discussions around internal controls or process level changes that needed to be made. He was able to provide accounting perspective of a unique billing structure to both a customer group as part of a financial presentation his own team as well. So this just showed his breadth of being able to discuss accounting matters with a group who doesn't know what a debit and credit is versus a group who lives and breathes debits and credits. In his documentation, he captured how he was successful by considering his audience to determine the appropriate context and language, as well as using visual charts and graphs to convey context. And of course, preparation in advance, always necessary. Overall, I thought Henry had a strong application. If we had a little bit more time, I think I would have coached Henry through a different format, but I was afraid that that was now entering on my personal bias and how I like to see things laid out, but I did think he had very strong examples in each of these different areas. So at this point in time, I would like to open it up to the group for other thoughts, comments, questions.
Ellen, nice overview. On the application or questions for Ellen or Henry?
Well, with that, Megan, should I move forward with your approval?
That sounds good.
Okay, I move that there is sufficient evidence that Henry Cao has demonstrated the competencies necessary for initial licensing per OAR 801-010-0065.
I'll second that motion.
All those in favor of approving the application of Henry Cao, please say aye.
Aye.
Thank you. Any opposed? Any abstentions? Okay, hearing none, the motion passes.
Good job, Henry.
Thank you. And if I may, I just want to say thank you to everyone on the board for taking time to review my application, and especially Ellen Bone for all her support and feedback that she has provided. I'll also be available to answer all my questions as well. Much appreciated.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
Okay. So with that, we're going to circle back to the application that's current on the list today for Jennifer Joyner. Jennifer is on the line with us, and we are working on sharing a video of Aaron Piazza's overview of the application.
I'm unmuting me in case you have to have that to hear the video, so, and I've never shared, so bear with me. Can you all see it, even though it's paused?
We can see that you've started to share your screen.
Yep, there, yeah, there it is. Okay, I'm going.
Work.
It's a little difficult to hear.
Okay, let me pause it here. Okay, I have the volume all the way up, so I don't know if you can turn your volume up farther. I don't know how to make that work. Sorry.
Thank you.
Transaction, so she backed up a little bit from about she was like her belongs. So I thought that was a great example.
So the one question I guess that I did have that I want to make sure that we're very clear on as a committee, and maybe you can help us with that, is that I see a lot of references to your current position and your current daily work. And so I just want to make sure that we're crystal clear on the time period that those examples in your paper are from. And if they are from the 18 months during which you had a direct supervisory relationship with your second supervisor.
Yeah. And like towards the end of the paper.
Cool, okay.
And then, finally, for competency G, she provided additional clarification on the presentations, the oral presentations of cash forecasts, the revenue trends with her management, as well as the monthly, the high-level financial statement overview presentations and analysis she has with the upper management. So with that, I'll open it to the committee for discussion. Megan, this is Norm. I thought those additional explanatory paragraphs that Bianca added were very good and really helped highlight exactly what she's doing and how she's being compensated. So I thought they were good additions to her there. Demonstrated the competencies necessary for initial licensing per OAR 801-010-0065.
I second that.
Thank you, Gary. The motion on the floor is to approve the application. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 All his support and all the back and forth that we've had the past couple of months. I really, really appreciate his support. Thank you, Brian.
Of course. You did a great job.
Thanks. Thanks, everyone.
It's real good. Okay, so we're through pending applications for today's meeting. And then we move on now to item number 5, which is new business. So it looks like we have a few items in the on the list. One is the QC annual report. We have some MOU annual reports and program updates that were circulated with the committee earlier this week. The 2021 meeting calendar, QC roster and service terms overview, and then a new supervisor evaluation form. So with that, I think, Julie, I'll hand the floor over to you to cover those new business items.
So the QC annual report, and so items A and B are for information only. Also D, on item D, we would just ask if you have any updates or changes you'd like to see to the roster, please email Stacy so that we can get those updated. Especially this year, we found that, you may want your home address on there or your, things may just be different because of COVID. So just to review and let us know if there's changes. The meeting calendar, the board will approve the 2021 meeting calendar at their meeting on December 17th, but this is your opportunity as a committee to go through those dates and make sure that, we've tried to be sensitive to, avoiding the first week of the month for month-end close and for, all the little deadlines for taxes and the holidays and, we try to be aware. But if we've missed anything, please speak up right now, because if we don't have a quorum, that just means all the changes, and that's not easy for you guys to do through quick polls. So we'd rather get it right. If nobody has any comments on that, then the last item is item E, or you can comment on any of it if you have questions about the annual report. I guess for our newer people, we should go through. So every year at the last meeting of the year, our MOU programs, so there's four of them. We have Intel, Lithia, Cambia, and Department of Revenue. They have these memorandum of understanding with the board. If you don't already have a copy of those, we are happy to send that out to you so you can read, the detail behind that.
but part of their part of the agreement is they need to report annually who their mentors are within the program, who's in the pipeline, you know, how complete they are in their program, whether they're just, you know, new, brand new, or if they're moving their way through, or if we can expect to see them coming out soon. And then because we redid in 2019, we redid all of those contracts or agreements, annually they're required to report any changes that they've made within their program, whether it be reporting changes or, you know, because they'll outline, you know, the, trying to find my words here, but the way they move, sometimes you're not gaining all of your experience within one department. So the way they move their candidates or applicants through their own facility to gain all of the necessary experience. So that they kind of outline that. And if there's any changes to that program, they need to identify that annually for you and for the board. And then, you know, the rest of it's just informational.
Thank you, Julie. I think that was a helpful overview for everybody, particularly the new folks on the line.
Megan, this is Ellen. Can I stop for just a second? So I did look at those MOUs. What would we be looking for when we're reviewing those, particularly as a being new to the board? I mean, it was good information, but is there anything in there that we should be critical of, sensitive to, I mean, other than general changes?
Within the agreements, not necessarily, unless there's something concerning to you, and then we could always have that discussion. It's background for you so that, for example, today we had two applicants that came through those MOU committees, right? And so, for instance, one of the advantages, I hate to use the word advantage, it's not like anybody has an advantage, but one of the reasons you might go through the extra work to do an MOU is that it doesn't have to be, the supervision for that candidate doesn't necessarily have to be direct. They don't have to show an org chart that shows a direct line or even an indirect line, because those mentors can serve as a supervisor licensee. So, for example, you know, if you, Ellen, were at Lithia and you were on the MOU committee, you could supervise somebody no matter what department they were in. So they could get experience throughout, but they would report back to you. You could oversee their whole experience, regardless of who their direct supervisor was. So when I say advantage, you know, it's not an advantage, right? You still are being supervised, but it loosens up that direct reporting responsibility, so you've got one person. So we have identified those people who are serving as mentors, and we have the resumes on file. We know that they have the appropriate experience, and so that should give the committee and the board a little bit more comfort with that level of supervision without, you know, in lieu of an org chart that shows, you know, that reporting.
Julie, so that's great. Right, absolutely. And, you know, from my perspective, I think what it does is it really demonstrates that the organization is being very thoughtful and intentional about the experiences that the candidates are getting. So, for example, if they need to rotate into a different department to get exposure to a process or a procedure that they may not otherwise get in their sort of native department, then, you know, then that's something that you've got multiple people with their eyes on, making sure that that candidate is really getting a thorough exposure to all of the different areas within the competencies.
So what I'm hearing is that from our board perspective, what we're looking at is really the new members who are coming on into that supervisory track, than the individuals who are either participating in the program or have subsequently decided to not participate in the program. Is that a fair statement?
True. As a committee, in general, maybe you look from last year, maybe they had maybe one MOU program had 10 candidates in the pipeline, and now all of a sudden they have none or one. Why did that happen? Why, you know, they didn't come through, maybe they didn't pass through and become licensed, but they just dropped out. So do we have some concerns with the program? Is there something going on? Maybe they lost some supervision. Maybe they had employee turnover, which would be an easy explanation. However, that annual update should reflect, you know, a big change in who those mentors are. So looking at it from year to year, it's more of, I guess, when we say informational, it's more of a big overview. You can kind of see what should be passing through, and it should be a relatively consistent timeline if everybody's moving through the program at the same approximate pace. And if there are any concerns, why did everybody drop off? Or how do we, why are these big changes? I mean, it's just kind of a looking at patterns or trends and just making sure that everything seems, legit. I, bad word to use because, I'm not trying to discredit any of it, but just it's just more of a broad overview for us at that level.
Thank you. And I promise this is my last question on this subject. So when we think about the folks who are coming in and a part of the supervisory role, you mentioned that their applications are on file. Is there anything else that we're asking these individuals to do, like years of experience, or how are we getting really comfortable that, like, yep, this person is going to absolutely be able to oversee these candidates in a really robust way?
So their requirements are the same as any other supervisor licensee. They're required to be licensed, through the entire period of supervision and the entire period actively licensed throughout their time on that MOU committee, as well as five of the 7 years prior. So they, they have at least the same experience that everybody else does to be allowed to be supervising. But in addition, they're sending us their resume. We don't pass those out publicly. I mean, but we do keep them on file here at the board, but so that we can look at the history, not just their current position, but where they've been and their well-rounded history. There's no guarantees. There's just that added level of comfort knowing that and they've been approved. Megan, you were on an MOU committee, so you could speak to this a lot better than me.
Well, I don't know about that, but I'm happy to take a pass at it. And yes, having been really involved in the implementation of the MOU program with Lithia Motors, I think part of it is just overall just transparency. We understand that when the committee receives an application, if there's a skip level in the supervisory duties or if someone is in a different department, that might raise questions. And so I think what the MOU is really designed to do is say, we have this pool of people who are really dedicated to this program. They would come together on at least a quarterly basis as a committee to review the individuals in the pipeline, to talk about what experiences we wanted to get them, to talk about what interactions the candidate was having with their mentor. And so really, it's just to kind of be very transparent and open and upfront about, hey, this person might not report to me directly as a supervisor on my team, but I am their mentor in this very specified role that we have taken a lot of time to define and parse out and make sure that those interactions between that mentor and that candidate really are in alignment with what those direct supervision requirements are per the OARs. And that's kind of how I think about it.
Okay, thank you. That was all really helpful context.
Excellent. Thanks for the questions. Good questions, Owen.
Yes. What do you think about the MOUs? Eons ago, when I was certified, there was a checklist that we had at the University of Library, and you had to go down and do the inventory, you had to do this, you had to do that, you had a bunch of things to check off. Is it, and the supervisor would work it with you. Is this the same with the MOUs now, only it's following the OARs? So is there a checklist internally that they are following to make sure that they hit all the different areas that we're interested in?
I can speak to that, at least with the MOU that I'm most familiar with, and I think we have all of the actual MOUs on file. These are just the annual reports to the updates, so I'm sure if you wanted access to those, you could certainly get them. But really, what it sort of looked like from the program that we developed internally was each of the 7 core competencies, of course, and then the types of experiences that would be qualified examples under each of those competencies and which departments those sort of resided in. So really, I think making sure that getting that those experiences to meet those competencies, that's really the checklist, and then how that was put into action is really similar to other organizations in that close relationship between the mentor and the licensee. But then there is also a roadmap that says, if you need examples of types of projects that would help meet this competency, then, for instance, if someone in
the payroll department needed an exposure to risk assessment, they may have rotated into the internal audit department for a for an interim control testing cycle so that they could get exposure to internal controls, risk assessment, and what that looks like. So I don't know if that helps, Mary, but that's one example.
Now, that does help. I was just curious because the two most recent ones that I had from Lithia, getting concrete examples from them was pretty difficult. They both used some of the same wording in terms of we have a robust or a dynamic tax department that does blah, 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 blah. And it was, you know, getting them to come in and say, here's what I did. And I was thinking if they have to, in the process of going through meeting the MOUs, go through checklists and say, this is the experience you're getting to meet this requirement. It might make it easier for them when they put in their applications with us to give us our examples.
Thank you for that note, Mary.
So, Julie, I did have one question. It looks like I received four, and I might have missed the Intel MOU or the annual report, but I've got Lithia, Cambia, and the Department of Revenue. So I don't know if we've received Intel.
Thought we did.
I also did not receive one from Intel.
Okay, so we will check on that and send that out.
I know that there was one we were still waiting on. And I don't remember off the top of my head which it was, but I know that there was one we were waiting on when I sent them out.
I'm just checking right now to see if we have it. And if not, I will reach out to them and we'll get that out to you.
Thanks, Julie. And I think this conversation segues really nicely into this final point here under new business item 5E, which is the new supervisor evaluation form. I'm pleased to see this form. I think what it does is, for those of you that don't know the history, I think previously the citing supervisors were actually the individuals that drafted the narrative on behalf of the candidate. And then some years ago, there had been a shift to say, no, we really want to hear from the candidate what their experiences were in their own words so that we can really kind of suss out the quality and the retention and comprehension of what those examples and experiences really looked like. I think what we've kind of noticed is this continuing, maybe trying to find more of a middle of the road active involvement from the supervisors in this whole process. So part of our evaluation of the candidate is not just kind of working directly with the candidate, but also, you know, being in touch with the supervisor, getting an understanding of how those interactions went, what that looked like. And then I think this also, and I'll let Julie speak to it here in a minute, this expanded form that I will be included with the application also gives the supervisor an opportunity in their own words to kind of talk through and represent what those interactions look like, which I think is a good improvement. So Julie, I'll go ahead.
I agree, and it allows perhaps even for them to be more candid, because sometimes we've experienced a couple times recently where supervisors were a little bit hesitant. They would speak with me on the phone and be much more candid about their overall opinion of their applicant. But, you know, it was a little bit uncomfortable maybe writing all of it down on paper that you're then giving to the applicant to submit with your application. You know, maybe makes for difficult interactions with the office after that or whatever. So allowing them that opportunity to either, you know, rave about somebody and not feeling like they're being overly complimentary, or, you know, the converse is true as well.
I appreciate that. Any questions or comments from the group about really assessing the quality of those interactions from a supervisory level? I think that's a really critical piece of what we do in the review of these applications. And I want to make sure that we all kind of have an opportunity to talk through different strategies or approaches or questions. And you know, we've got a lot of newer members to the group as well. So yeah, any thoughts?
I should note that we're in a transition period with this document, so we are still accepting the old document. We will encourage use of the new document beginning immediately, but if we receive applications and it's difficult for the supervisor to complete this, we're accepting the old one or the old method through the end of this year. So you may still see, you know, you'll see a transition period in your next meeting.
And I think the other thing for us to just kind of point out why that's such a critical component for us as we review applications that are coming through industry is that supervision isn't maybe as structured as we would expect to see in a standard kind of public accounting setting. And so, you know, essentially, if someone has a license for 5 years, they can sign off on someone's application and kind of push them through the process. So that's where I think it's really having that additional context and really getting a good feeling, you know, for how those interactions went, I think is, you know, coming up on the list.
When, and now I'm new, so I don't have a lot of background, but one of the things I noticed between prior applicant review and this time around, because Henry was a part of Cambia, within his experience, he very much had projects that were almost felt like cherry-picked for passing your CPA. Like, I mean, they were projects, they were reviews of revenue or being asked to go and, like, document a process flow from, like, beginning to end, all the way from the transaction to how it gets to your financial statements that I didn't see in some of the other applicants for industry. So I felt it just with the brief experience that I've had is that these programs really are structured to provide that supervision and to provide that experience that you want CPA candidates to have. So I would agree. I think it's important to talk through that supervisory in other areas where we don't have that transparency and insight into kind of what they're getting out of their mentor and their reviewer.
I agree with Ellen. I find too that having additional information from the supervisor would be really helpful. And I think that one of the problems of the supervisor praising their employee too much would be that afterward they might be expecting a raise and maybe they aren't going to be able to do that for them. So it probably is good to not raise their expectations for something like that, but still be able to get the feedback from the supervisor.
So one of the things we could potentially do, and I'll have a sidebar with Julie on this, is maybe similar to how we have review forms that are helpful tools sent out and circulated with you. Newer members. I have an interview form that I used to utilize when I would call the supervisors and just walk through a handful of questions, really picked from what the OARs describe the direct supervision requirement to be. And so we'd be happy to potentially share that as a resource. And, you know, if there are ever questions or anything that we can do to help support even those efforts of connecting with those supervisors, please let us know. Anything else from the committee this morning or from the board staff? Or Jason, how was your first participation in one of our meetings?
This is great. This is the reason why I wanted to be on the board. So.
Great. Well, you guys will get to know Jason. He's awesome. We're very lucky to have him.
Okay. Anything else before we adjourn for the day?
I'm going to be that person. I have one last question. I'm sorry. I'm the person everybody hates in a meeting. They're like, oh, just stop with the questions. Sorry. Last question. I want to make sure this isn't an unconscious bias on my part, but the applicants are getting an initial review before they're presented to anyone on the committee. And I'm just trying to think through, like, what would be the channels of escalation if you open up a narrative and you go, oh no, like, no, I don't think the experience is here. At what point in time do we then go back to Megan, to the state? Who would we at that point in time go back to and express, like, I have concerns about this narrative?
That would come back through Stacy, actually. So, so another thing to note, since there are so many new people on that committee, and it's, we should say this periodically anyway, it is really imperative that all of you committee members do not have conversations about applications outside of the QC, outside of the public meeting. So it's okay, like, for example, we had Megan talk with Mary just about, because she had a difficult application, not difficult in terms of quality, but just a little bit different scenario about the work. And so they did have an offline conversation, but not about the application, but just about process as some mentoring. But we have to be really careful. So for you to call anyone else on the QC and talk about an application in general, that can't happen. Just, I mean, you know, not that you've done it, but, you know, we have to be really, really clear. We do say that often. But you could certainly, if you had those concerns with one that you were doing that initial review, reach back out to Stacy, and we could review that internally as well. Just to, you know, and then we could have conversations with you, and then we could approach somebody else on the committee, you know, maybe to get more advice. It's just you two can't have that conversation directly.
I would add.
The only exception to that would be if we had a co-reviewer for, you know, someone's first time. I think that's, you know, the only exception to that.
Yes, the buddy, yeah, our buddy system that we use to get everybody online. And I think Desiree and Steve will learn about our buddy system here really soon.
Yes.
And you're right, Michael, that is the exception, because that's more of a mentoring. You shouldn't be necessarily having conversations. I mean, you know, if you're talking about an application, but you're not making any decisions, you're not, you know, choosing a path, you're just teaching them how to do that review.
I would add to Julie's comment that all of the applications are reviewed in-house, and if Julie or myself feel like, oh no, with the narrative, we don't send them on to the committee for review. We'll work with the applicant to try to get it up to muster, but if it doesn't pass our review, we're not going to send it on to you.
With the understanding that we know that a lot of them that we do send forward, they will need a lot of work, but that coaching, rather than us saying, well, we're holding on to your application, we're going to make you get it to our level, and then you'll go on to a reviewer who will also work with you. If we feel like the bones are probably there, we're not CPAs, right? And we certainly are not industry CPAs. So, you know, if you have concerns, please do send that back. If you just feel like the experience just isn't there, because we don't speak that language, and that is an important part of it. But Stacey's right, we do review that two levels in-house. So if you're getting it, we feel like there's probably enough there for you at least to look at it.
Yes.
There's plenty of it, or not plenty, not a lot, but there are a few that don't even make it to you without multiple revisions, so that you're not wasting your time. Thank you.
Right, good question. Anything else before we adjourn for this morning? We had a really full docket for the day. This is a really good meeting.
It's
probably
our longest in a couple years.
Megan, just one quick more item, one more item for me. I was going to Stacy. Stacy, when you sent out the agenda and the, you know, the materials for the specific meeting, could you also please just send that one page that lists the wording of each of the motions?
Oh, sure.
We kind of get hung up on that every meeting, it seems like. If everybody just had it right at the end, it would be awesome.
You got it.
Thank you.
Okay. All right, everyone. Well, with that, we'll go ahead and adjourn the meeting at 11 a.m. Thank you, and look forward to seeing you next year, 2021.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, everyone.
And happy holidays to all of you.
Oh, same to you.
Thank you.